It's May 16th, 2019, and you're listening to the Big Gay Architect Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Pascal, CEO and top dog at Spotted Dog Architecture, and I'm the Big Gay Architect. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for tuning in again. My guest today is Weston Pugh with Updike Pugh. I almost say Pugh Updike, but that doesn't sound right.
You got it. It's Updike Pugh. And we are with Dave Perry Miller.
Excellent. So give us a little bit of your background, because I've known you for 10 years
now. I would say, yeah, when you were back in the design district, and I cannot remember how Jeff and I came across you all, but I think that
y'all just kind of wandered into the office, I think, one day, didn't you? Or was it with the happy hour? I can't remember, but it's been long enough we don't know.
It's been so long we can't actually remember.
Yeah.
But, because I remember that we actually were looking, because that's when Jeff owned Remax, and that's when I thought that we were going to take and go down there and start renting next to you guys, because the space was so great.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you could have gotten kicked out with us when we did.
You know what? Everything happens for a reason. So, and then we moved over to Dave Ferry Miller.
There you go.
So.
Well, so how long have you been actually in real estate?
I think I got in at the perfect time. I got in 2008, right when the market crashed.
Excellent. Right when we started the last firm.
Exactly.
Perfect time.
And here we are still. So that's testament. And I think it was probably the best, worst, scariest decision I ever made in my entire life.
Yeah.
Because you moved to a new town, learning real estate for the first time.
So you didn't do real estate before you...
I did new home sales. So that's real estate adjacent.
Okay.
But it's not...
It's like neighborhood and the neighborhood sales.
Yes. People come to you. I don't actually like...
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's a good way to cut your teeth, but it's not long term for me. So I came here and had to learn the city, had to make friends, had to learn how to be a realtor. And then the market turned around and crashed. And so it was a very, very lean 3 years. And when they say that the typical realtor is going to write checks for the first year, I felt like it was for 2 years almost. I didn't even get a paycheck. I didn't have a single closing for 18 months.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, was Jeff already established?
Jeff was established. And he actually does quite a bit of business with developers at times.
Okay, yeah.
And so he actually had Parkside Cedar Springs, and it was a renovation project. And so I was so familiar with new home sales that every single day after lunch, I would go sit on site from noon until 7. And I would, because I didn't have clients, because I didn't have a sphere, because I didn't know the city, but I did know how to sell. And so I became extremely familiar with what they were doing as far as the renovation project.
Mm-hmm.
And then the project itself, and then just became really familiar with that neighborhood. And so we ended up selling that project out. We ended up picking up the project next door, and we sold that one out simultaneously. So it did work out. It all came out, but it was very nerve-wracking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, same thing for architects. You know, we were scrambling to find a project to work on, and you were hoping that... I mean, we had 2 years where we had enough work for two of us, so that's why...
Yeah.
And our third partner did all the marketing stuff because we didn't have anything for her to do. So, I mean, you just were scrambling to find anything. And so it kind of makes me wonder, because every realtor starts out fresh. I mean, you're fresh out of the box. You don't know anything. You're learning. You're working under somebody. What's the level of house you're probably selling? I mean, do you just start like at the rock bottom, like I'm afraid to go in kind of? And see the house kind of sale, or is it you sort of?
So I think that you're kind of geographically going to be dictated a little bit of that. So if you pick open houses, because that's typically the way to cultivate a business, mm-hmm. is to do open houses on Saturdays and Sundays.
Okay.
So if you're trying to like be in an entry level neighborhood, you're probably going to be with people who are less sophisticated with the process itself. If you step into like 5+, and I say that now because even now 5 can sometimes be a starter home. 5+, usually that's a second home.
Yeah.
And then on from there, people understand the transaction. So I think that as a new agent, it's better to probably begin in a spot where no one is knowing exactly what's going to happen.
Okay.
And lay the foundation work. And so, you know, one of the first things I did is I did not work with anybody in my sphere, friends, just because I felt like I needed to get some experience so that I didn't embarrass myself. And, you know, I didn't want to make a mistake and do something incorrect on a larger transaction, yeah. You know.
Oh, sure. So sure, nothing like screwing it up big.
Nothing like that. There's nothing worse. Yeah. So,
well, you know, all I could think was, you know, you took me to see the house that you were going to buy.
Oh, I know.
And we told this story on your vlog. I guess this is a vlog.
It's a vlog.
Weston and Jeff do a live vlog, and we're talking. I don't know how they do it. I said it on theirs the last time they did it, and oh my God, I think I would just, my head would explode. Like,
you did a great job on it. What are you kidding?
Oh, no. I was just like completely like, oh my God, what am I doing?
It is. It is a green screen. It is a producer. It's 3 cameras, 8 lights, and yeah. It is click, 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 go.
Yeah. Well, so we were telling the story that Weston had asked me to come look at a house that he was going to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into it and I'm like, well, what's your budget? And then he told me his budget and... Then I looked at him and said, no.
Yeah.
but that house, I mean, it needed all new electrical, all new plumbing, all new mechanical. Kitchen had to be completely redone. The subfloor had to be redone. I mean, there's so much work.
And that was the stuff that we could see.
Yeah, that's stuff we could see, not counting the critters living in the attic.
That was a lot.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first things, because being in the business, I've seen so many situations where they didn't consult a professional, where they DIY'd the bathroom or they changed space with walls, and they never had anybody, A, to help them maximize or to create continuity.
Yeah.
And I think that my whole thing was like, if I'm going to bite this off, then I know that I'm going to say, okay, this is my budget. Now I need to add 20-25% to it. Just in case. And then I gave you that number and you still
said no.
And it wasn't like, let me think about it. You were like, no. I was like, damn, that was quick.
That's kind of harsh.
It was harsh. Yeah. But it was good.
Well, but it's one of those things that's the kind of house I picture the first time realtor having to sell. That's just, you know, been trashed out and, you know, the owner's just looking to dump it and you're walking in thinking, how do I sell this POS and get it off my hands. I mean, that's what I always picture.
What you would think.
For some realtors.
So it's not always money pit, because I think that there's the good and the bad of HG Supply or HGTV.
Yeah.
So HGTV people walk through houses and they kind of get an idea of what it should or shouldn't be staged.
Right.
They never get it all the way. But I think that at least, and even the agents kind of now, and Dallas is a very competitive market for agents. And so I think that when you look at our houses across the board in Dallas, especially inside 635, I think that people really get very serious about how does a house convey digitally? How does it convey when someone walks through the door?
Yeah.
You know, what's your follow-up even after that? Okay. So
they're much more cognizant of making sure that
this
is really pulled together and, mm-hmm. and I'm not just trying to...
Yeah, it's not band-aided or it's just not slapsticked together. You know, there's hopefully some thought, you know.
Well, not always.
No, God, no. Trust
not
me.
Not always. Well, and one of the things about doing this podcast was this idea that, you know, we're all touching architecture
mm-hmm.
all the time, every day, whether we realize it or not.
Right.
You know, this is my job. This is what I do. But for a realtor, you're touching, I mean, every day you're seeing probably everything from the good to the bad to the ugly to kind of in everything in between. So you're constantly immersed in this market of residential real estate and residential architecture.
And residential mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, because we see stuff so quickly, you know, and then you have, so we see stuff that has been renovated and the stuff that is typically well thought out. And when I say well thought out, it starts like at the curb. Uh-huh. And it really does start with the way that the house is, or the house is laid out on the lot and the way that the landscaping is done. But then it goes even one step further in the way that people have envisioned the space and the way that's going to be used.
Right.
So is it multifunctional? Is it dedicated only to formal dinners? Or can it actually breathe into the living room, into the kitchen? Does it convey? And then the fit and finish. And Dallas is really funny because Dallas loves really well done fit and finish.
Yeah.
They will buy it.
Oh, yeah.
Builders get really nervous about that. And they're like, should I spend this? And typically we say yes. Like people eat with their eye. If it wasn't important, then developers out in the Metroplex wouldn't spend hundreds of thousands of dollars staging homes.
Yeah.
So it really is that critical that if you're putting your house together, that you reach out and have professional help when it comes to doing the inside of your house. We walk in all the time and you can see people make simple mistakes like roof lines don't match.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Like you don't get the right texture, you know, little things like people don't realize like the sheen sometimes. And these are all like these weird indirect things, but they can add up to be like a house that no one can describe why they don't like it. Or it can be the house they can't tell you why, but it is the one without a doubt you're going to make this happen. And it's really that quick. You can see it in flooring really quickly where someone, and you know, the craziest thing is if you buy flooring on sale, don't expect to get top dollar for it. Don't. It can't. It doesn't work that way because the people that walk through your house know that you bought it on sale. And they'll call it out. And sometimes they'll hold up their phone and show you how much you paid per square foot for your flooring.
Oh, it's, wow.
It's that fast.
Wow.
And and you would think, oh, that's probably a first-time home buyer or that's millennial. That's someone that's my mom's age that can do that. The technology has changed. And so people, I think, because of that, can spot quality. And they can spot something that isn't quality quickly.
Yeah. Well, how hard is it to sell a DIY house? Like if you walk in and the seller's telling you because you know, they're saying, oh, well, we made all these changes and, oh, no, we did it all ourselves.
Right.
How hard is that for you for selling? I mean, how hard is it to get someone to come in and buy this house that they don't know?
Right. So that's an interesting thing. So if someone tells me that, so there's a couple of things that are going to play into that. So do they have documentation? That shows, you know, like receipts of where they bought it.
Or some actual drawings of what was done.
Some drawings. And then the other thing, too, is did they pull permits? Because people don't realize that, like, pulling permits is not always as simple as you would want it to be. Right. And that's why somebody who's licensed professional, that's one of the things that hopefully you guys know how to do and do well.
Yeah.
And y'all can take care of that. Because when someone says they've done a lot of the work, what I really want to do then is I want to go to the city and I want to pull the permits or pull to see that they pulled permits. And if they haven't, then I have concerns that if
the brother-in-law did the wiring and you're going to burn the house down in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Or when my client suddenly has to sell the home, then the next person comes up and is like, well, where's your permits? You know, I bought this, for lack of a better term, I bought this liability.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to try to sell it again. And it's still liability.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those key features that people really begin to understand.
Yeah.
It all has to be priced right. So you can't have an architect come into a neighborhood that's $200,000.
And do $500,000 worth of work.
On a $200,000 thing. And then put a $150,000 pool in and say, it's just under $1 million. That doesn't help me.
It's the only house in the town, in the neighborhood, that's just under $1 million.
Yeah. So I think that... And the other thing, too, is I think that architects can present believable budgets because you do this for a living.
Yeah.
So when you say this is 800 square feet and the wood that you want is about $4 a square foot, you do the math. Is that in your budget? Whereas if Joe and Sally go into a house and they're like, I bet I can do everything in here for $10,000.
Yeah.
And you're like... You can't even get doors for $10,000.
Right. Well, it's like the people that will call with the kitchen renovation. Oh, I've got a $5,000 budget or a $10,000 budget. I'm like, how much are you going to spend on your appliances?
Yeah. Like, does your budget include cabinets and appliances?
And appliances, what do we do? Countertops? So you want countertops. Yeah. What's the deal? So, yeah, I'm kind of surprised by that sometimes, that notion of, well, I can do it myself.
But we've also had architects in the same vein can sit down and say, this is stage one, stage two, stage three.
Right.
And they help you achieve this, but they help you in a way that it doesn't look like it was done in stages. And so it has a cohesiveness that reads start to finish.
Sure.
And I think that that's the biggest thing, is that when I walk into a DIY house and I'm like, oh, that's circa 88. And then I turn around and the living room is 92. And then I'm like, oh, and then there's that green that they used in the bathroom. So it just, it reads as a maybe I'm bored type thing, or I don't know. It just doesn't convey credibility, value to the buyers.
Yeah. Well, you know, just to think, okay, I've updated this room in this decade. Now I'm going to go to the next room and update that, but not come back to the other room and think, I need to update this as well.
Yeah.
So it's very visible. I mean, like I said, you guys have probably, how many houses have you been in your career so far? If you had to guess.
I've been in 12 today. So.
Okay, so there we go. So you guys get so used to seeing and being able to tell.
And one of the things that like Jeff and I do is, so we tour at least once a week and not for the show. So we tour just so that we know what's inside of North Dallas.
Right.
And then we also can tour Uptown and East Dallas. And the goal for that is not so that because we have a buyer today, but so that if we have somebody who wants to do a renovation project, we can reference something. If we have a buyer that comes back in 3 weeks and something's still available, or we know the agent or the builder, then we can go find stuff. And it's so interesting because as we tour houses, new construction can be just as guilty of incorrect product
as a
renovated project. Yeah. And I think it's more saddening. Is that a word? Is that right?
I don't know.
It's sadder.
I don't know.
It's sadder.
It's most sad.
It's the most sad story when it's new construction that misses.
Yeah.
Because you expect them to get it right. But then when they don't, you're like, oh my God, you're not from Dallas. And I think that, you know, somebody who's even as close as Frisco or the Colony or wherever thinks that they can come into Dallas, and Dallas just kind of sometimes has a different vein, you know?
Well, I think you have the builder group that thinks, I'm going to do it as cheaply as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to come in, I'm going to take this house on this lot, I'm going to flip it, and I'm going to do it for $4 a square foot.
Uh-huh.
And you walk in and all the countertops are the same granite.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not the most expensive granite on the market, but they're all the same. The bathroom, the kitchen, everything is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't bothered changing. There was one house I was looking at across from a project I was working on.
Uh-huh.
And they were adding a second story to it. Did a huge addition to this older house. And they never changed the front window. So you have a gable end and a window that doesn't fit the size of the gable.
Mm.
I'm like, why would you do that? I mean, it's things like that that they're thinking. So you have that group that thinks, well, I'm just going to flip it and cheap and then sell it on to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I've also heard people, you know, they bought something from a flipper and suddenly the foundation on the addition was starting to move on its own and away from the house. And they're like, oh, crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole reason I bought this is now moving away from the house.
that is a very sad story. And I think that it's up to the agent at that time to like help people like make sure that their due diligence is done.
Yeah.
And that you're working with somebody who's got a book of people that can help them, like inspectors that are true,
right.
Structural engineers who know what's going on,
right.
Electricians and plumbers that are familiar with. And then the other thing too is to bring someone in like you and say, listen, we need 2 hours of your time, maybe more. Help us,
right.
You know, and the deal is you've helped us with clients like that, not because it's a monetary thing, but because it gets your name out there.
Well, sure.
Because if they want something done in the future, there's a point where they've worked and interacted with you in a situation where they truly needed guidance and help.
Yeah.
And I think that's when we're able to actually strike value deeply with people.
Right.
And so you've helped us out quite a bit.
Well, you know, I think that's one of those things we always, you know, architects will always tell you, call an architect first. Don't call a contractor, call an architect first. I don't think people think about a lot, you know, I'm looking at a house. I know I'm going to make renovations to it. I'll call a contractor and have them come over and look. People just don't automatically think to call an architect and have them come over. So, you know, the fact that, you know, I know you guys, I know several other realtors in town.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if I ever have to sell my house, I'm going to have to hire somebody from out of state.
Because you know so many of us.
I know so many people here.
Somebody's going to be mad.
Someone's going to be mad.
Yeah.
Probably the realtor who sold us the house to begin with, because
that's the safest one to go back to.
Well, because we wouldn't sell on year number. Like, well, I guess we were in the house a year and a half, and he starts sending us pictures of bigger houses in our neighborhood for sale, because it was our starter home, and we were supposed to be moving in about 2 to 3 years. You know, kind of general. You know.
Yeah.
And so he starts sending us photographs, and we're like, dude, we're not moving. What are you doing? And he just did this for about a year, and then he finally just gave up.
He's like, they're home.
They're never going anywhere. I'm just going to stop wasting my time. I'm like, thank you. Oh, my God. Because we would just get, like, every couple of weeks there'd be an email with pictures of something that was for sale in the
neighborhood. Really?
Yeah. And we're like, dude, we're not moving.
Huh.
But he also told us, the other thing he told us was, he said, when it comes time to sell, you won't have a problem because people love buying from gay guys.
That and the house true. Will
sell fast because, you know, oh, gay couple owned it. Boom, we're done.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if I should feel offended. And he was gay. I mean, he was another gay realtor. And I'm like, I don't know if I should be offended or if I should think, well, that's a plus for us. I don't know, you know?
You're like, I don't know where. And it's funny because I will say that there are times when that is absolutely the truth. And there are times when we all have that friend. And I'm not going to name names. Okay. You know who you are. That still breathe Versace 80, 84, 86 into their house. And you walk into that thing and you're like, and they are so proud. They are just in love with it. And it is like, it is time to edit, yeah. You know? And it's just really, it's, you know, it's like letting go for them of a child or something, you know, they just don't want to do it. And I'm like, this isn't who's buying today.
Yeah.
You know, and unless you are going to, someone like you, when you bought this house is going to show up. We kind of have to change things.
Unless you're selling to another party, circuit party queen.
From the 80s.
From the, yeah, you're never going to sell a house.
And it's true because we do find that. We do find that the person that buys your house is typically who you were when you sold it.
Really?
We had a house over in the Meadows and literally doctor, engineer, and the people that bought it, doctor, engineer.
Wow.
And I was so nervous about this house. And they came in and they absolutely loved everything about it.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, there's some yellow laminate countertops y'all are overlooking. And I was like, okay. But, you know, they really appreciated, they both loved to cook. And this couple that was selling loved to cook. And they had raised flower beds with 5 different zones. They had planted 3 different types of Italian figs.
Wow.
They had Szechuan pepper plants. I mean... So this all correlated for them,
yeah.
Which I found fascinating.
Interesting. Yeah. I would never have guessed that. I never would have put that's a factor.
Mm-hmm. That's odd.
Interesting. Well, you know, we bought our house. We bought from the original owner. And
sometimes that's the best.
The house was built in 1961, and you walk in, and she had updated it at some point. So we had the 70s wallpaper in the entryway that was the gold backed with the orange paisley flocking on it.
Yes.
And then in the bathroom, she had papered over the original paper with silver back and pink. And then she had a pink faux marble countertop, like laminate countertop, and a pink sink and a pink toilet. And you're just like, okay, well, but you could see the house. I mean, you walk in and you could feel like the house was going to be something or could be something, and there's that sense. So, you know, we were willing to overlook the pink marble and the white carpet all over the floor everywhere that, you know, lasted about 10 minutes clean.
Yeah.
And all that stuff, you know, we're looking past it because you could see what the house had the potential to be.
Yeah.
And so we walked in, we're like, okay, this is it.
I think the hardest thing sometimes is to get a... Because not everybody wants to do a project. And sometimes people get really nervous about when they walk into a house and it's not 100% done.
Yeah.
And Dallas is really funny about that. Because Dallas is either, I always joke and say, people are more concerned about happy hour than Home Depot in Dallas. So either you're one of those people that want to buy it in that condition and you're the guy that makes the money. Or you want it like turnkey. Like I walk in and I hit my Sonos system and it's on.
Yeah.
I mean, there's...
Yeah. Well, now, so you just bought.
I did. So, yes.
So now, describe, because you bought a townhome.
I did.
But it's brand new.
Brand new.
And you walk in and you just go click.
I do.
Yeah. So we know what type of person Weston is now.
Yes. Because, well, here's, this is out of.
Did I just frighten you with the other house?
I'm going to explain the other house. Because the other option is sanity. Yeah. Insanity. Because my partner, Jason, literally thinks that he can do everything.
Oh, God.
Thank you.
No, I lived with a father who thought the same thing. We had no running water for 2 days because he was changing out the water heater.
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
That probably would be my life. But Jason's going to cuss, scream, and throw things. And then he's like, but I did it. And he's going to feel so proud. And I am be like, you're stressing me out.
I have to go have a cocktail.
I have to leave. I'm going to a hotel. I'm done with this. So it is just like, it was not in the cards for us at that moment. I think that if I didn't have to live through something, no, I take that back. I'm not going to do that with him. And I told him just the other day, he was like, I really want a different house. And I was like, okay, well,
you know, go buy one. You can live there. I'll live here. And we'll.
This is the budget, you know. Yeah. And he goes, well, we could do the X, Y, and Z. And I was like, no. We're hiring an architect. They'll do everything. And he's like, I need a little bit of a project. I'll do the demo. And I was like, no. Because what happens if they get in there and they're like, wait, we don't need to knock this down. We can save them $5,000 by rerouting. Or what if you knock something down that changes the structure of the house and suddenly the roof starts sloping and now I've got a $15,000 fix-it-up bill that I didn't budget for. Yeah. I'm like, no, you get on a plane and go to Mexico and come back when I'm done with this house. Golly. So, wow. Yeah. Mm-mm.
Wow.
As I rock back across my arms in this chair, I need to relax. Sorry.
I totally get it. I'm like, you know, there's a reason God made plumbers and electricians and carpenters and everything else. I'm like, but yes, my father installing a water heater and no water for 2 days. And, you know, the dishwasher comes out and, oh my God, you know, 14 trips to Home Depot.
Yeah.
Before you finally got the right parts. It's like, just get it done. You know,
Trying
to get it done. It's just crazy. So, yeah, I think, you know, looking back on doing everything, if we could find a house that we loved that was completely finished and done, I wouldn't mind moving into that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be okay with that. But I'm also an architect.
Right.
So I'm going to move into that already done house and start looking around and going,
they should have done this.
They should have done that. And, you know, if we move that over there, this will work a lot better. Or if we change that, we should be. So James, bless his heart, is stuck in a continuous loop of home improvement.
Really?
Well, sure. Because, I mean,
you're doing something.
Not all the time.
Once every 6 months?
Well, not even that right now, but I could walk. I mean, I can walk through my house and tell you right now, even after the massive renovation we did.
Really?
Change. Oh, yeah, in a heartbeat.
See, it's so funny because we've been in that house for just over a year, just under a year, right at it. And there's like three things that, like, straight off the bat that I will tell you that I will never, ever, like, do in a house again. And it's so simple, and they're so clearly defined to me. Mm-hmm. And before this, they did not even register.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Yeah.
So it's a learning curve. You know, there is no perfect house. If there was, we would all live in it because they just reproduce it.
Yeah, it'd be magical.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you probably wouldn't have a job because then we would.
I know, because then no one would move.
No one would move. They'd just move into the perfect house and stay forever.
You got to sell them the house that they're not 100% sure on. Then they want to move.
There's the other trick.
Yeah, no.
Wow.
But you also told me about Shoshobibon.
Shoshugibon.
What is it?
Shoshugibon.
Shoshugibon.
Yeah.
I got obsessed with that. And it's so interesting because right after we started talking about that, I went on tour. And in one of those really nice houses, they had used Shoshugibon in the ceiling of the dining room.
Oh, cool.
And made it really intimate.
Yeah.
And I think that they kind of had to because the room was enormous. And I was like, and it was just one side glass and then the shoshugibon on the ceiling. But it really flowed really well.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. It was a good one. And it was so funny because I felt very proud of myself because
you knew what it was.
And the developer was there and the architect. And I was like, oh, did y'all really put Shoshugibon in the ceiling? And they both looked at me like, who's this?
Who is this man and what is he doing here? Well, what cracks me up was, so you talk about that, you know, that you know that sort of stuff. When you guys were doing the vlog last week, was it last week? Uh-huh. 2 weeks ago.
Last week? No, 2 weeks ago, because last week we had on a landscape architect.
Okay. anyway, when you guys were doing it, we were talking about learning what picture mold was.
Uh-huh.
And all I could think was, who doesn't know what picture mold is? I was just floored. I'm like, you guys didn't know what that was? And but to describe it and talk about what it did.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so you're educating somebody about something because but for me, it's like, oh yeah, it's just picture mold.
So it's so funny because I think this is where everybody gets in their lane.
Yeah.
And they use abbreviations or they go through something just with such quickness that you would be surprised who doesn't know things.
Yeah.
You know,
architects are horrible at it.
Like somebody says something so fast. And so I think that that's one of like, I know that's what I feel like portion of my job is educating people about what other buyers are looking for so that they can make a good decision when it comes time for resale. But at the same time, you're helping people like take that space out of their head and then turn it into something even better than what they could imagine.
Right.
And I think that's what's critical. Or you save them from themselves, you know? Because I've seen when they can't save them from themselves.
Yeah.
Money doesn't buy style, I'll tell you that much.
I would agree with that. Uh-huh. Very much so.
It doesn't. And I think that we see trends more today where people, the tube of gray is over.
Hey.
You heard it here first.
Oh, God, grays. I'm tired of looking at grays.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, let's get something else.
Yep. So we're seeing different colors come into the marketplace, which is nice. There's they're experimenting a little more with, like, the use of wood in places that you typically wouldn't see. Sometimes it's a win. Sometimes it's not. Deeper, richer colors. A little more white, I think, to allow rooms to breathe and allow you to use your own accessories to bring in color. But one of the things that we're finding is the way that it's become a more of a multi-generational buyer today. And so we'll get families that need to have a second master. And it always, or let's say it needs to at least be a second bedroom. Yeah. And so the second bedroom needs to be on the first floor and it needs to be, have a full bath. And the big thing that they're screwing up on, and I can point out 18 homes that they've done this on, is that they assume that the powder bath doesn't need to happen anymore.
Yeah.
And that the bedroom, bathroom, downstairs combo, that can be the guest bathroom as well.
Yeah.
And if you really have someone that lives there, it doesn't quite work out that way. I did see one done 2 weeks ago on Pasadena, and they actually took and did the half bath adjacent to the garage, and it was rear into garage, and then they took and gave the half bath a door to the outside so that it would work with the outdoor living space, but also double as a pool bathroom.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I've ever seen a half bath done that way. And it was funny because we have an architect that's going to be building on Forest, and he drew out this huge, beautiful modern home. And one of the things that I kind of commented on was you have this enormous outdoor living space, but to get to a half bath, look how far you're telling like someone to go.
Halfway through the house to get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you've located it. I love where you put the half bath, but it doesn't work. So it's okay to put a second half bath that is just for outdoor use.
Right.
And then this one was more dedicated. And so it was one of the funniest things, but he's like, wow.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think we look at what buyers are coming into the market as we see so many people that are downsizing.
Yeah.
And so downsizing maybe to 4,000 square feet, which is interesting.
Which is downsizing.
Which is downsizing.
Yeah, no, we've had clients downsize from 10 to 5.
I'm yeah. Like,
it's just you. What do you need 5,000 square? Sell your stuff.
Yeah. And it's so interesting. So we talk about this multi-generational house, and then you can go one step further and you can talk about what's the perfect downsizing house. So we sold a house in Rowlett on a golf course, and it was 3,400 square feet, two bedroom.
Wow.
So imagine the house that your parents live in Plano or Frisco, and then cut off all the bedrooms but one, the master and one. And that's what this developer did. And we saw, and I was, to be honest, I was really nervous because this is a niche house.
Yeah.
And we sold that thing in 10 days.
Yeah.
And it was the most interesting thing ever. But it was laid out properly. So what they had also done is they had widened the entry so that if anybody ever wanted to add additional rooms, that wide entry was where the staircase went.
Yeah.
And then they had raised the roof line.
Enough you could build up in the attic to do it. That's smart.
But it worked. And you know what the deal was? Is we had enough information there, both in the house and online, that people actually could make a decision and know. And it was a funny thing, a two-bedroom house, and when I held it open, people averaged, and this is what I love to do, average how long people are in the house, between 20 and 40 minutes is what they averaged.
Wow.
They just circled and circled.
Were they looking for the third bedroom?
Probably. They're like, where's he in the bedroom? But you know, the deal was, is they were trying to wrap their head around the fact that they really don't need those other bedrooms.
Yeah.
Like, this works.
Yeah.
And they had done really great large living space and outdoor space, and the kitchen was gourmet, so they could still entertain, but then you go get a hotel room or you need to go back home.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it played out, and it was amazing.
How funny.
I was like, man, if we could build more of these, that might really...
Well, maybe so. I mean, you know, you think people, you know, people don't want to clean the extra space, don't want to, you know... I am fine not having people stay at my house.
I am too.
I of course can't talk my in-laws into that, but but I'm happy if people don't stay there. We actually did an apartment for a client. It was a finish out 5,000 square foot apartment for just her, and they had what was to be her husband's bedroom. He passed during construction, but his bedroom and then a smaller bedroom for like a nurse. And her kids stayed in the hotel adjacent.
Really?
Yeah, she's like, I'm not having... She goes, I have spent too much money on this paneling down the hallway to have my five-year-old grandson run down with chocolate in his hands.
Yep.
You know, she goes, we're not going to do that here.
Yeah.
They can stay at the hotel. They'll be fine.
And it's true. And I think that people can... If they can wrap their head around that, because at the end of the day, you're paying taxes and heating and cooling a space that...
You're never going to use.
And if you were to take... And if you were to take that square footage and then, like, take it out of the budget and figure out what that was and then amortize that over how many days somebody comes and visits with you, you probably could send them to Hawaii.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's so crazy. It's so crazy what people think they have to have.
Yeah. Well, we need to wrap up because we're getting a little long. But one last piece of advice to someone who's buying or selling?
I would say it's the biggest transaction that you're going to make.
Right.
And you owe it to yourself to talk to multiple agents and find out what they're going to do for you during the transaction that sets your house apart, and find out if it's a team. And if it's a team, is it defined itself as a team because there's people that are together, or is it a team because they actually work together and they know each other's intricacies of the contract?
Right.
And I think that that is critical. And
so in other words, if you started selling a house for me, Jeff could take over if he needed to, because you guys are... I've worked together long enough, you know, and you will work together that well.
The deal is that the systems that we have in place allow our admin and our marketer to work seamlessly inside of the transaction. And then we have just systems set up so that we know everything that's happened on the transaction. And he and I are in each other's presence probably more than seems right. Yes. So if he has a conversation, 9 times out of 10, the conversation on the phone that he's having or I'm having, the other one is listening to it.
Yeah.
So it just, I don't know. It works for us. Our clients, our repeat business is pretty happy with that. Let's just put it that way. So I think those are the keys. And we'd love to work with you.
Of course you would.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on.
You bet. Thank you so much for having me. It's great.
Yeah. And for everyone out there, we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another podcast. And I think who's coming on? I honestly don't remember it, but I should know because it's my show. So anyway, we'll surprise you next time. Thanks, Weston, for being on.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks so much.
Bye.